Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready? Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome to the Thriving Marriage Podcast, episode number 12. I'm Heather Choate, international marriage and mindset expert, and I'm very honored to be with you today. I'm not going to say that I'm excited to be here because I honestly didn't know if I wanted to do this today. Mark and Jennifer, his wife, will be doing a podcast for you next week, and so I had volunteered to talk about mindset today. However, there are some things going on in my personal life, and my family's going through some really challenging challenges. Is that the right way to say it? Challenging challenges? That's a little redundant. But we're really going through a hard time with our oldest son, who's dealing with some mood disorder that's really starting to come out as he's moving into his teenage years. And we've had some really rough times with him, especially with his anxiety with school starting. I know some of you here in our Thriving Marriage group that are watching live can relate to school starting here at the beginning of August here. Actually, we're more into the middle end of August. But it's been very, very rough. In fact, I would say that this is probably one of the top three hardest times of my life as I'm seeing my son struggle and seeing the way that it is affecting our entire family. And my own mindset has been pushed to the limits. And we know that when we go to the limits, that's when we grow. However, I was feeling like maybe I'm not really up to sharing this today. Then I had to step back and think about it. And think about where that was really coming from inside myself and start to question my own internal stories, which we'll talk about today. And I had to remind myself that I'm not doing this for me. I am doing this for other people. And I truly believe that the challenges that come our way come to help us so that we can help other people. And if I don't take advantage of that, then I'm not taking advantage of the opportunities that are before me. And so as I was contemplating that, even on the drive to and from preschool today, I was thinking about how honored I am that I would even have the opportunity to share some of the challenges that are still present in my life and how learning to harness the power of my mind and controlling thoughts and emotions and feelings, even in the midst of challenges, is such an honor and an opportunity. And so I'm grateful to be able to do that. Hey, April, good to see you. All right, so that was a huge preface for what we're going to be talking about today. I just wanted to be really real and really vulnerable, and then you guys know that I get it. There are some times in life when it's smooth sailing, and that's when I feel like I can shout from the rooftops what it takes to be successful and have a happy marriage and, you know, embrace the challenges of life. And there's other times I'm in the valley with you, and I know how hard it is. I've had, you know, sleepless nights. I've had anxiety. I've had worry. My mouth is broken out in mouth sores right now because of the stress. And there's definitely those ups and downs of life. And it's not always just about pretending perfection. That's never what it's about, right? That's never what we're about. But it's really about embracing each of those moments and sharing the things that help us get through those so that we can use them to our advantage and become the best version of ourselves. So that's my intention today as I share with you the three mindset secrets to restore your marriage. And these three, I distilled them down essentially into just three. Usually we go with four, but today our magic number is three that have helped me to get through the different challenges of life. And I'm literally using them every day. And I wouldn't be able to come before you today here on this podcast with integrity if I knew that they hadn't completely transformed my own life as well as thousands of people that we've had the privilege of working with. But before we get to all of that, I do want to share our client wins of the week. And the first shout out goes to James DeJean. He is a new member here in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group. And I really wanted to highlight his win here. He had, okay, in his words, had a good morning this morning. I actually took time to listen instead of trying to fix things with my wife. It helped tremendously. So I just want to say a huge shout out to you, James, right there. You took time to listen instead of trying to fix things with your wife, and you said it helped tremendously. This is a huge, huge win in my mind because it's pattern interrupting. Like, we get into the same patterns, we have the same habits, and it looks like your habit before was that you wanted to try to fix things. We know that when we're trying to fix things with our spouse, when they're pulling away or they don't want to be in a relationship anymore or things are tense, it only backfires and it only pushes them further away. And so you are implementing the exact same things that Mark and I teach here at High Thrive, which is listening to understand, and you saw the results. So just wanted to highlight that you're on the beginning of the journey, and that is fabulous. And then the other win comes from Gloria. Gloria's been doing the work, and her relationship with her husband is even better than before. She shared, since he's been back home, things have been really great. We are connecting like we did when we first got married, maybe even better. I am so grateful to this program. I had my last one-on-one with her yesterday. Oh, she's talking about her coach, Victoria, here at iThrive. And were it not for her being on the group calls, I think I'd feel lost. It is hard to believe in March, we were not even speaking, and here we are back together in one house and very happy. This program is good and God is great. So a huge high thrive to you, Gloria. All right, now going back on to mindset. And I loved what Farron said in our interview with him a couple podcasts ago, where he was saying, I heard all this talk about mindset and I just kind of rolled my eyes and I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Yeah, I don't need that. What I need is I need to fix this thing with my wife. And then he realized that the mindset thing was the entire thing that was causing the problems with his wife. And once he started to work on that, then everything else started to fall in place and he had incredible results. And so now he loves the mindset work, just like me. So maybe you're kind of rolling your eyes like, oh, mindset, that's kind of hippie or woo-woo, or I don't know, maybe that's just not for me. And so what I want to challenge each of us today is to look at the results that we're getting in our lives and recognize that there are probably, in fact, I'm going to say most likely, things going on inside of us that are causing those things externally to keep showing up, especially if we keep finding that the same negative things show up to us again and again and again in our lives. All right. So I asked my team and I asked our community here for feedback on mindset challenges because I have my perspective, but I didn't want to be biased on what I know, but I wanted to get a really good perspective on what the most common mindset challenges are that are really blocking a lot of people making progress with their spouse and making progress in their marriage. And these are the most common ones. Okay, ready? Here we go. All right. In no particular order, these are the most common ones. The changes I've made won't work. So see if this sounds like you. I might take a wrong step. I might say the wrong thing. I might do the wrong thing and create more distance. If my spouse says they don't love me, it's over. Nothing can change my husband, my wife's mindset, or their decision. The walls built up between us are too thick to tear down. If a divorce is filed, it's over. If they say they want a divorce, it's over. If we hit a road bump or a setback, it's all over. All right, so check in with yourself and see if you have heard yourself in your own mind, in your own heart, in your emotions, have any of those kind of thoughts. And what we're going to be talking about now is what limiting beliefs are. A belief is nothing more than a thought that you have repeated over and over and over, and it has created physical pathways in our brain. Neuroscience calls them neural pathways. And they're like highways or shortcuts in the brain that it uses to conserve energy. The brain expends an immense amount of energy to function. And so our subconscious is like number one job is to protect us and to preserve energy. And so it loves shortcuts. So it says, if this happens, then it must mean this. So then I do this. And it saves us a lot of the thinking work, right? And it's a good thing, because then every time you come to a door and you see a doorknob and the door's closed, you don't have to wonder what to do. You automatically just reach out and open the door and step through it, right? Which is a good thing in most instances. But when it comes to relationships and it says, oh, this feels like someone is being dishonest with me, when someone's dishonest with me, then I need to withdraw or I need to immediately attack them so that I can feel safe. And so we can create some really difficult situations when we have limiting beliefs that aren't serving us. They're serving us in some way because they're always protecting us from pain or from fear or from failure, something that our brain interprets as very negative experiences, right? But they don't serve us in ways that it causes a lot of chaos in our lives. So I'll go through that. All right. I noticed two main things about all of these mindset challenges that came across. And the first were very fear driven. So the fear driven ones were like, the changes I've made, they won't work. I might take a wrong step. I might say the wrong thing. I might do the wrong thing and create more distance. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to say it. I don't know how to solve this. I'm overwhelmed. And all of these stem from deeper rooted issues and beliefs like, I'm not good enough. These are very fear driven types of responses. And what happens is that when we are in fear, we move out of our reasoning part of our brain and into what's called the limbic system, which is the, I'm getting tongue tied again. It's the fight, flight, or freeze response. And this is important when there's like a lion or something that we really need to be afraid of, because it conserves energy, cuts off the reasoning part, and gets us immediately into instinct. But what's not so great is that our reasoning part of our brain is cut off. And if we are in a relationship, we definitely need to have reasoning. And what I see a lot of people getting stuck in is that they get into the fear mode. They get into absolute panic. And I felt that myself. I know what it's like, that anxiety and the fuzziness of thought and like the, you know, your heart is beating fast and you just get stuck into this feeling of dread. And sometimes it manifests at a really high level. Like you get really volatile, you get very angry, you get very scared, you lash out, you become very desperate, you're in panic. And then that can be reduced even to just a very low, dull feeling that you're kind of suppressing inside, but it's always there. Kind of like when you're at work and you're trying to focus, but you just have this like knot of anxiety that just won't go away. And so all of those are kind of fear-driven responses to a situation. Now, fear is very normal, and in fact, I think fear is our teacher. Fear can help us and serve us to show the things that we don't want, and therefore show us the things that we do want. And it can help teach us things about ourselves if we allow it. However, staying stuck in fear does not serve us. We definitely want to be using the reasoning part of our minds, and we want to make decisive actions and move ourselves into an emotional state of calmness, centeredness, and empowerment, right? Because that is where we're going to operate best from. So many times, couples will come to us and a person will say, you know, I'm just so desperate. I don't know what to do to get my spouse back. Every time I talk to them, I just get like tongue-tied and I don't know what to say. The words don't come out right. And if I say something, then I immediately like analyze it and I think about everything I did wrong and now how it's going to make it all worse. And so then the next time I get to talk to them, I really don't know what to say. And so I just panic again and I say all the wrong things and I do all the wrong things and they're acting out of this fear-based instinct, right? And that is an incredible opportunity there to learn. And there's an awesome shift that happens as we work with clients and we show them how to move out of that fear and into a state of calmness and centeredness. All right. So what's really important is that we identify where the fear is really coming from. Is it fear of loss? Is it fear of failure? Is it fear of I'm not good enough? I'm not worthy. I'm not deserving. I'm afraid I'm going to fail. I'm afraid I'm going to be humiliated publicly, right? Where is the fear really coming from? And when we can identify that and we can see if there's maybe a deeper issue that's been going on for a long time inside of us that keeps having this fear show up for us time and time again. And then if we realize, you know, it's more just fear because of this one situation right now, it's really an isolated event. Okay, now I can process through that and get to a more empowered state and to a state of calmness and serenity. And so instead of coming to my spouse feeling so desperate and panicked, which of course is always going to push them further away, which is one of the most interesting things, oftentimes people will think, I will own this myself. I will think I'm doing the right things. But if I'm not doing them from the right intention or the right internal state, it doesn't have the effect, right, that it needs to have. And so we see a lot of people that are, you know, trying to go on dates, trying to communicate, trying to open up communication, trying to meet needs, trying to make positive changes. But internally, they are still panicked. And internally, they are still desperate and they're still full of fear and worry, self-doubt, and lack of confidence. And what happens is that despite their best external intentions and the actions that they're getting into, they continue to not see the results that they want. And then they wonder why. And they start to beat their heads and they say, you know, this isn't working. Why am I even doing this? Maybe I should just give up, right? And what they don't realize is that they're internal fear is what's causing the other person to continue to pull away. Because even if you're doing and saying the right things, but you're doing it out of that fear and that tension and that panic, it's going to come across. We are much more intuitive, I think, than we probably give each other credit for. And my spouse and I, we can read each other's, I don't know if you want to call it energy or emotional state. And if he says, how are you doing? And I'm like, fine. You know, does he believe that? Absolutely not. And so our spouse can sense what kind of energy or emotional state that we're coming from. And even if we're trying to do the right things, but we're not doing them in the right way or from the right emotional place, they will still sense that fear and that panic, and it won't feel safe to them. Bottom line is, we don't like being around people that aren't in control of their emotions. If they are full of fear and full of panic, it makes us feel uneasy. It makes us feel unsafe. And so we naturally want to withdraw ourselves so that we can feel safe. And so knowing that, even if consciously you're trying to do everything right, but subconsciously there's a lot of fear there and you're experiencing some of these thoughts, you know, everything I'm doing, it's not going to work. It's too late, right? I keep doing the wrong things. I don't know what to do. I'm so overwhelmed. I can't do this. I'm not intelligent. I'm not capable. I can't handle this. I think I said that one twice because that's the one I say a lot to myself. Honestly, that's the one I have to work on. And so when we're hearing ourselves saying those things, then we can recognize where it's really coming from and learn how to make that shift of, yes, this is scary. Yes, this is hard. Yes, I am unsure of myself. But now I can start to work on an internal level so I can start to change that internal belief, that internal story. And when I make that shift, we call it a shift because that's just what it is. It's going from one state to another. I used to be in this place and now I'm in this place. Then my spouse will sense that. I will feel safer because they will sense that now I am calmer. I am more at peace. I am more in control. I am more empowered. And they will sense that and it will feel safer to them. Not only will it feel safer to them, but it feels a heck of a lot better to us, right? We feel so much more serenity, calmness, peace, even in the midst of challenges. And this is one of the shifts that has to happen in order for couples to really succeed in reconciling. So if you're noticing that you are in a lot of fear and have these fear-based thoughts and limiting beliefs, then just be aware of that and start to shift out of that. It is a choice. Even if you felt like that for years, I've worked with clients that felt a certain way for years, going back to 3-4 years old, and they're in their 40s or their 50s or even 60s, and they can learn a new way. Because here's the bottom line. Those physical pathways that I talked about in our brain, yes, they become like highways and they become kind of like hardwired. However, the pathways can change and we have the ability to create new pathways. And we do that by starting to do the opposite of what we did before, right? If a belief is a thought that we have thought again and again and again and again repeatedly, and it's created a physical connection in the brain, then we start to think some new thoughts. And as we think some new thoughts again and again and again and again and again, eventually the old belief will die and it will become dormant in the brain and a new pathway will form. And that will become that now the habitual response. Like, that's just the way that we respond now. So I used to go from being very insecure and feeling like I wasn't good enough to now I feel secure and I know that I'm good enough and I operate from a completely different place. It's transformed who I am on an internal level, and then the external results have changed as well. That's kind of the big picture overview of what that looks like. Now let's go to the other side of the mindset challenges that we're seeing. These ones, if my spouse says they don't love me anymore, it's over. Nothing can change my husband, my wife's mindset. The walls built up between us are too thick to tear down. If a divorce is filed, it's over. If they talk about divorce, it's over. If they say they're in love with someone else, it's over. If there's an affair, it's over. If they want to separate or say they don't love me anymore, it's over. If we hit a road bump or a setback, it's over. And this one is another really common one that we see. And where this really comes from is it's the idea of permanence of feelings and permanence of situations. So it's saying that my spouse one time said, I don't really love you anymore, or I want to be with someone else, or I want a divorce, or maybe they said it multiple times, but we're now saying that that is fact and nothing can change it. It's saying that this situation or this feeling that was expressed is now permanent, right? And I have to laugh because I've done this myself and it's absolutely ridiculous because things are constantly changing. One of the things that we can count on is that things will always change, right? We are always getting older. We will all eventually die and pass on from this life, and nothing will remain the same. So the only thing that is permanent is the impermanence of things, that nothing is permanent. And so it's a fallacy to believe that just because something is this way, maybe right now or last week or last year, or even for 20 years or 50 years, that it's always going to be that way. It's not true. It's a lie that our brain tells ourselves. And sometimes we do it to excuse our own behavior. And sometimes we do it, again, out of fear, out of desperation, out of pain. What really happens is that it creates a sense of hopelessness. And this is victimhood. It's saying that this circumstance, this situation, what they've said to me is bigger than me and it will never change and there's nothing I can do. And this one, I think you can sense it, irritates me because it takes away our power. And people that live in a state of disempowerment are those that give into hopelessness and into depression, and they let the circumstances of life beat them to the ground. And it's a tragedy to me because it's a choice. And we always have a choice about what we're going to do. We do not choose the challenges that come to us. We cannot control our spouse. We cannot control sometimes the things that happen to us in our lives. There will always be challenges. But the thing is, we always have the power to choose what we're going to do about it. And what really happens when we're saying these kind of things, you know, the walls we built up are just too thick. They'll never come down. If they say they are in love with someone else, it's over. There's nothing I can do if they want out. There's nothing I can do to turn this around. It's too late. I don't think this will work. I don't know if this will work. There's nothing I can do, right? Is that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so then they say, yep, see, look, it didn't work. I told you, they're in love with Mr. Right over there, and I'm Mr. Wrong. And so, yes, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then they look at that and they say, see, I was right. What they won't realize is that they gave away their power and they failed by default. Sometimes we're so afraid to fail that we don't even try and we fail by default, which means we've already failed. So it's really important that we recognize if we're saying any of these things and if we're choosing to give our power over to a circumstance or a person or something else instead of choosing to empower ourselves and recognize the things that we do have control over. Stoic philosophy says that we should focus 90% on what we can control and only 10% on the things that we cannot control. And most people, you go out to the grocery store, you go to Walmart, you go to the gas station, you talk with your friends, you talk with the other people in the PTA or whatever you're doing, right? You talk to your coworkers. Most people are focusing on 90% of the time on things that they cannot control. And most of the time, if we check ourselves and we think, okay, what did I do today? What kind of state was I in today? What was I thinking about even an hour ago? Was I giving more of my thought, which is my power, and my energy to things that I can control? Or was I thinking about things that I can't control? And we'll recognize more often than not, we're thinking about things that we have no control over. We cannot control the decisions of our spouse. We cannot control their actions or reactions or behaviors. We cannot control their mindset, right? We cannot control the weather. We cannot control politics, or I'm talking about like really big things that we have maybe some influence over, and we'll get to that in a minute. Influence is different, but we don't have complete control. Like, we are not God, and we cannot force anyone or anything, right? We cannot control the economy or the big world wars or things like that that are beyond our control, but we tend to fixate on those things because we're afraid of them. And again, it comes back to fear, and we're giving more of our attention to our fear. And when we're focused on our fear, then we're not focused on our faith. And I don't just mean faith in a religious, like spiritual sense, but faith is the belief in the things that we want to see, and the belief in the things that things can be better, and the belief in ourselves, and the belief in true eternal principles beyond, you know, any kind of science or religion or dogma or anything like that. Truth is truth. There's eternal truth. And so faith is the belief in those things. And then taking action, which is the other part of faith, because faith without works is dead. That is a scripture. So you can look that one up if you want. But faith without works is dead. And we have to couple what we want with action. I love how Robin Sharma says it. He says, ideation without execution is delusion. And so basically, if you have a great idea, but you don't do anything about it, then you're living in delusion. You're wishing and hoping and pleading and maybe even praying that things change, but you're not taking any action on those things to become a real creator in your life. So do we want to be a victim to our circumstances, or do we want to own them ourselves and step into our personal power? So this is the high level overview, and now I want to share with you what this really looks like with some real examples. I really believe in the power of our stories and the power of what we've gone through and what we've helped other people go through, or, you know, in our case, we've helped our clients and many other students go through, so that we can learn from them and their stories can help us to recognize, oh yeah, I see that now in me, and wow, they overcame that and I can do it too. So for me, like I said, for years and years and years, I never recognized this on a conscious level, but my deepest internal belief was that I wasn't good enough. I just felt like there was something wrong with me, and that I would try really, really, really hard to do things right and to be considered good enough in the eyes of someone else to kind of fill that void so that then maybe I could feel good enough about myself. And for some reason, I developed this belief very early on in my childhood and my teenagehood and young adulthood. It continued to stay with me through into married years, that I just wasn't good enough. And even though I tried really hard, I never would measure up. And if I didn't measure up, then people that I loved would leave me. And so, like I said, I can articulate this now. And if you can't articulate this in your own words about what might be going on for you, that's okay. Pay attention to the symptoms. Okay, I'm going to tell you we actually tell you never focus on the symptoms because that's not where change is. But right now I want you to focus on the symptoms. Not funny. All right. So the symptoms were for me that I would feel so much tension, but I would try to suppress it. And I would feel maybe that Ben, my husband, you know, we were eight, 10 years married, that he wasn't very open with me. And I couldn't stand that tension. And so I would do things to try to get him to be more open with me, and have more emotional connection that I felt was lacking. I didn't know how to articulate that. And the only way that I knew how to do that was a very unhealthy pattern. I've shared this before here on a podcast, but of kind of letting the tension build up until I felt like it had to explode. Otherwise there would be no resolution. And so then I would create a argumentative explosion scenario with Ben so that then we could resolve it. And then I could feel close and connected. I can shake my head about that now because I can see how ridiculous it really was, but it ruled our relationship for, like I said, 8-10 years until I finally learned a better way. And I finally came most importantly to the peace within myself that I am good enough just as I am. And I couldn't just say that and have it like ping off me, you know, like a raindrop or something. I really had to settle down into the depth of my soul, into the very core of who I am, so that I could feel it with every part of myself, my mind, my body, every single cell. And I could just know that that is truth. And it was the place that I would then act from and move from. And so now in my relationship, that unhealthy cycle has resolved itself into a very healthy cycle of knowing how to open up communication and create better connection with my husband, because it started with myself. I had to resolve what was going on inside before the outside things changed. Now, what does this look like for some of the, you know, as you know, we've coached thousands of couples all around the world, but I wanted to share a few specific examples that over the years really stood out to me. The first is our good friend, Bruce Fox, and you can find his interview on our YouTube channel if you're interested in checking that out. But he shares just really openly and vulnerably about his experience in believing that he had to control others in order to feel safe. He felt a lot of fear. He felt a lot of insecurity and a lot of distrust of himself and others. It was like he felt like he was like constantly walking on shaky ground. And so to deal with that feeling of fear and unsteadiness, he felt like the way to do that, his coping mechanism, was control others. He felt like if he could control his wife, control his children, control his work situation, control everything, you know, you use the word control freak. He used that word himself. I am a control freak. And, you know, working with him on that. And so moving from that state of I can't let go of control, because if I don't have control, then I don't feel safe, to a state of safety is within me. And regardless of what happens outside, I'm okay. And he even used the words, I'm a rock of a man. And we went through very specific, like subconscious clearing techniques is what we do. To talk to the subconscious, this sounds kind of weird. That's not what it is. But it's to communicate with our mind, right? And where that limiting belief really stemmed from, and clear it and tell it, okay, thank you for serving me. You've showed up for a reason and you've served me to protect me from more pain and more fear. But now I'm ready to let you go. And I'm ready to adopt a new belief and build up the evidence to myself that this is true about me, that I am a rock of a man for him. And that was his empowering belief. And he conditioned that new belief and it became his reality. And now, I think it's been what, year and a half, 2 years later, he is a completely transformed person. And everyone else can see it on the outside and they don't know what he did. And he said, I worked on myself. What, you hear that? I worked on myself. No, he completely transformed the core of who he was. And now he's living a new story and it's having new results for him. So I love that one. And what's interesting to note is Bruce, his marriage was not saved. His wife chose to leave and have multiple affairs, and she did her own thing. And the most important thing that I love about Bruce was that despite whatever difficult external circumstances that he could not control, he truly became a better version of himself. And he inspires me and inspires all of us. And there are so many people like him that I could share, but his just stood out to me in such a powerful way that have done exactly the same thing. And so instead of giving up and saying, there's nothing I can do, she wants to be with someone else, she wants to go and sleep around, I can't do anything, my marriage is over, it's hopeless, right? If he had chosen that, and he could, we all have our choice, and you could choose that too. We all have that power, and no one can take that away from us. But how different would his life be if he had gone down that route and said, there's nothing I can do, and he had continued to live from that state of fear and trying to control other people? I can tell you what, he wouldn't have the relationship now that he has with his children. He wouldn't have the relationship now that's beginning a new romantic relationship that is now exactly what he has ever hoped for, right? He has become the better version of himself, and he has truly healed his life from the inside out. Another really powerful one is Dwayne. And Dwayne, it took a little digging, but underneath some of the tension, and there was a lot of a sense of, I'm not getting her fast enough, I'm not getting results fast enough, she's not coming back fast enough. But what it really came down to underneath all of that was this deeper, I can't forgive myself. And we realized that this deeper limiting belief, I can't forgive myself, was causing him subconsciously to push his wife away and subconsciously kind of thwarting his good efforts and his desires and creating a gap there. And it showed up as, you know, tension or kind of going back to the old habits that he used to have, because consciously he knew what he wanted. He wanted his marriage, but subconsciously he kept sabotaging himself because he felt, I can't forgive myself. I have hurt this person too much and I have done too many wrong things. I don't deserve her. I can't forgive myself. And this is a really, really big one. The other side of that too is, I can't forgive them. I can't let it go. And when people are holding on to that, it creates a lot of tension within themselves and a lot of bitterness and resistance, guilt and shame. And when you feel those on an internal level, despite the external things that you might be trying to do, it's going to keep showing up. And so we had to work with him on how to heal that and to recognize that I can forgive myself. I can make peace with the choices that I made in the past. And I recognize that I am good enough and I am worthy, and I'm going to keep doing my very best. And that's all that's required, is that I keep doing my very best. And as I do that, I am good enough. I am worthy of her love. I can accept it and I can bring it about. And now he and his wife are both working on their marriage. She put her wedding ring back on months ago now, which is incredible, and they're doing really, really well. But that was a turning point for him, because as long as he carried that, I can't forgive myself, it kept showing up for him on a very subconscious level, but we could see that something wasn't sitting there, and so we had to uncover what that was and really get to work on that. Just a couple others, really common ones. I'm not good enough. We worked with a lady named Kimberly, and her husband had beat her down verbally, emotionally, and she had accepted it. He would say, you're nothing, you're junk, and he would call her everything, and she'd be like, you're right, I am. And she took it all in and believed that at the core of her being, that I am not good enough. I am a piece of junk, right? I am not worth anything. And when she was in that kind of state, she had no power. She had no ability to set healthy boundaries and say, you know what, this is actually not okay. You can't talk to me this way. And so working with her on developing, I am good enough. And she would talk about going in the bathroom, and sometimes when her son was sleeping, she would be screaming, I am good enough, you know, and like screaming these affirmations to try to tell herself and prove to herself, I am good enough. I am okay just as I am. I do deserve love. I do deserve respect. I love and respect myself. And she completely transformed as a person, and her confidence grew, and she was able to set healthy boundaries. And that created a lot of healing in her relationship and empowerment within herself. She was no longer a victim to the circumstance or to what anyone else told her or said about her, or what she said or thought about herself. But she became a very strong, confident, capable woman. Now, I could go on and on. There's, you know, other ones. I'm not intelligent. So, you know, a client, Darren, believed since he was 10 years old, his parents told him, "You're not intelligent. You're stupid. You're nothing." And he had conditioned that. I'm stupid. I'm nothing. I'm not intelligent. I'm not capable. And he would say these things like, "I can't figure this out. I can't figure this out. I don't know how to do this. I'm just, and so working with him on that, and we challenged that belief. One of the really important things that we do is that we don't accept what our brain tells us, because a belief is just a belief. It's just something we chose to believe. And so we don't have to keep choosing it. And we looked at the evidence. Darren, you have 6 children. Do you think it takes an intelligent person to raise 6 children? Yes, I do. Are you a good father? Yes, I am. Doesn't it take a smart person to be a good father and to learn how to do that? Yes, it does. And for the first time in years, he started to recognize that that story wasn't true. And it became to, you know, it got to a point where it had less and less hold over him. And he recognized, I am intelligent. I am capable. I can do this. And so he stepped into his power. And again, amazing transformation. But with the whole point here is that it starts within. And when there are these internal stories that are going on inside of ourselves, they act like a filter through which we see the rest of the world. And my husband made me laugh last night because we were trying to watch the Broncos 49ers pregame, whatever. And I wasn't wearing my glasses, which with this pregnancy, my eyesight's gotten pretty bad, but I'm in denial. And so I couldn't see the plays very well, and it was making me frustrated and bored with the game because I couldn't see. And my husband knew exactly what was going on, and he looked at me, and he said my own words back to me, and he said, "When you change the way you look at things, Smo," that's his nickname for me, Smo, "when you change the way you look at things, Smo, the things you look at change." So I swallowed my pride and went upstairs and put on my glasses and then enjoyed the rest of the game, even though the Broncos lost, which made me mad. But it's true. When we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change. Just like I can look at the world through these blurry eyes and be in denial and keep wondering why it's so frustrating and aggravating that I can't see things and I keep making things harder for myself. Or I can go put on the glasses that I need and see the world clearly in the way that helps me and serves me best. So just to kind of bring this full circle, what we focus on is really what we experience and what we see in our lives. Imagine that I were to ask you, actually, I'm going to ask you this. Look around your room. If you're driving, focus on the road. But look around your room, whatever space you're in, and in the next 10 seconds, count as many round objects as you can. Okay, ready? Go. Count all the round objects. Whatever you can see that's round. Water bottle, ball, glasses, I don't know, whatever else might be, you know, tail lights. Count all the round objects in the room. Okay, stop. Now, how many purple things did you see? Probably you don't remember seeing any, right? Because you were so focused on seeing the round objects, you weren't training your brain to look for the purple objects. So our minds are naturally programmed to focus on the negative things, to focus on the things that are going wrong. We have to say, I'm in charge of this ship. I'm in charge of my life. I get to decide where I'm going. I get to decide how I deal with these circumstances. I'm going to look for the purple objects. I'm going to see the good things. I'm going to see the positive things. I'm going to experience gratitude. I'm not going to believe this conditioned story that I grew up with since I was a child or whatever, however long. I'm going to choose a new empowering truth about myself because I deserve it and I want to see better results in my life. So, bringing this full circle, the 3 secrets. We've already actually covered them, but first is determine what you really want. If you don't like the results that you're seeing, start to do some new things so you can get some new results. And that truly happens fastest, most effectively, and most permanently when you work on the stories within yourself and on the limiting stories that maybe you've been living with that have not been serving you. Two, so uncover what those limiting beliefs really are. Everyone that's in our newsletter, I'm going to send you our top 12 common limiting beliefs, and I'm going to have you go through an exercise to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 to uncover what your limiting beliefs are. Maybe you recognize, I have a lot of fear, but I'm not sure where it's coming from. I have a lot of things I don't like in my relationship, but I don't really know what to do about it. This will help get you some clarity on what your limiting beliefs are. And then, three, you're going to build new beliefs that empower you and allow you to be the truth of who you are. And as you do that, the things in your relationship, the things in your life, the circumstances that you find yourself in are going to change as well. It doesn't mean that life's going to be perfect. There's always going to be some obstacles and challenges, but you will find that you meet those with grace. You meet them with strength. You meet them with power. You allow the ebbs and flows of life, like I'm doing right now. I'm in one of the ebbs, right? And I know that as I stay true to doing these internal things, the flow time will come and the easier time will come. And this too shall come to pass. It hasn't come to stay. It has come to pass. There is no permanence in anything. It is only what we choose to do about it, how we choose to steer our ship, and what we choose to learn in the midst of the storms of life. So if you're not in our newsletter, I encourage you to go over to the thrivingmarriagepodcast.com/newsletter. It's completely free, and we send you guys incredible guides and value and stuff over there. Then as you go through that guide, as you're rating your comment, these common limiting beliefs, you're going to find some that are triggers for you. And if you rate yourself on a 6 or a higher, then that means that that is what is showing up for you in your life. It is what is controlling the show. We think that we're in control, but 90% of our decisions are made by our subconscious. And so if you rate it at a 6 or a higher, that's what's showing up for you. That is what's subconsciously sabotaging you from what you really want. And so we need to do some work on that. And if you find that you are struggling with these deeper internal beliefs and just emotional states like fear, believing in the permanence of things, falling into hopelessness, victimhood, then take action on that and determine that you are going to learn a new way. You're going to reach out to those that have gone before you and know how to transform that so that you can start to experience the reality that you really want to have. And so I encourage you to go over, as always, to www.highthrivecoaching.com/apply, and you can book a free consultation with us, a complimentary consultation, to see how our programs or our coaching can best serve you so that you don't stay stuck, because life is too short to stay stuck and to keep reliving the same painful, fearful things year after year, or even day after day. It's not worth it. So, all right, let's go over to our marriage myth buster. I miss Mark. I don't know if you guys miss Mark, but I'm excited that he and his wife, Jennifer, are going to be on next week. All right, so marriage myth buster. This one is, changing myself will never work to change marriage. Some of you may have been thinking this throughout this podcast. Well, Heather, if I do all this work on myself, my spouse is still going to leave me. They're not going to recognize it. They're not going to believe these changes. They said they're in love with someone else. It's not going to change my marriage. We often hear that. And we often hear this: my spouse, they're the ones, they over there, they need to change or the marriage can't be saved. They need to leave the affair partner. They need to stop the divorce. They need to communicate more with me. They need to work on our trust. They need to, they need to, they need to. And again, I'm going to challenge you here that you're focusing 90% on what you cannot control rather than the 90% of what you can. And I want you to understand to the bone, in the very core of who you are, that you can save your marriage by being willing to go first. Remember that influence zone I talked about earlier? I'm getting back to it. I didn't forget. So 90% of the focus on things that we can control, which goes over into the next circle, which is our influence. We can influence things. And if we think that we cannot influence the state of our marriage or the state of our spouse, then we're in a state of delusion, because we can. And that is what a marriage is. It is the combination of both you and your spouse, and you both influence each other. So if your spouse is pulling away, if they're wanting a divorce, if they say they're not in love with you, they're in love with someone else, any of those things that you're hearing them say, then you're in a state right now where you cannot afford to wait for them to get on board, right? If you are waiting for that, most likely at this point, it's not going to happen. The likelihood of them suddenly doing an about face is not going to happen. And you cannot fall into the trap of thinking that they need to do it first, because it's not going to happen. You're going to be committing marriage suicide. I'm just going to say it for what it is. And because I see it happen, and it's a tragedy. So knowing that they aren't going to be the ones that are going to come around gives us the option here of, what am I going to do about it? How am I going to influence this situation and help to influence this relationship and help to influence my spouse? I'm not going to control them, and I'm not going to focus on them or anything that I cannot control. I will focus on what I can control, and that will have an influence on them. So another really important thing to note is that even if your spouse is willing to work on the relationship with you, and we do get many clients there, as you know, we still want you to work on it by yourself to start. Why? Because there is importance when we take ownership for the 90% that we can control. There is that shift that happens when you recognize at the deeper level about what's really going on inside yourself. And if you're still trying to focus on them, then you aren't going to get to that level. And that is what it's really all about, is getting to that level so that we can experience the greatest joy and happiness, peace, security, and strength in ourselves, regardless of what happens outside of us. So stop trying to control them. Focus on what you can control. And know that as you do that, as you work on yourself, as you adopt new thoughts, new feelings, new behaviors, the truth is that you have immense power and influence in the relationship, even if you don't think you do. But if you're waiting for them to work on it with you, then you're giving all that power away. And you're not recognizing how influential you really are. We call that a victim, and we know what happens to victims, right? They allow life to control them, and eventually it runs them into the ground, right? So I know that this can be some tough stuff. I may have said some things that really maybe aggravated you today or irritated you, and maybe in some way, but I actually consider that a win in and of itself, because there are things that are sometimes festering inside of us, and I'm not just gonna put a Band-Aid on that, and I'm not just gonna say it's okay, we can pretend it's not there. No, I'm actually gonna aggravate the wound a little bit, even if it's uncomfortable, so that we can get the infection out, so we can get what's been festering inside of you out, so that we can truly allow it to heal. And that's what I'm all about, is having real life transformation and real healing for the long term. So I want you to understand that you have influence. Remember I talked about when we're in a state of fear and stress, our spouse senses that and it pushes them away, even if it's subconscious, they sense that. But then when we make that shift to being, I'm centered, I'm in control, I'm like Bruce Fox says, I'm a rock of a man or a woman, and I am confident, I am capable, I am deserving, I am allowing all good to come to me. When we are in that state, our spouse will sense that, and it will feel safer, and it will feel more attractive. And that is where our power truly lies. So thank you for going through this with me today. And I honor you for sticking through it with me. And I honor everyone who chooses to take action to do some of that deeper inner healing so that your life can truly be what you want it to be. My friends, I am celebrating 5 years of being diagnosed with breast cancer, and I know how incredibly short our lives really are. So let's not get so caught up in the pain and the fear and in the challenges that we neglect to see the beauty and the gratitude of every single moment that we have and the incredible lessons and opportunities that life is presenting to us right now. So that's it for today. Next week, Mark and his incredible wife, Jennifer. I love her. We are old-time friends going all the way back to college. You're going to love her too. She is our special guest coming on with Mark, and they will be sharing with you how to come back to love. They're titling it Coming Back to Love, and how healthy relationships aren't about the absence of problems, just like life, not about the absence of problems, but about how we can quickly repair things and how you can make quick repairs in your relationship so that you and your husband or your wife can come back to love. Thank you for joining me, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.